But today I have an idea. Now just listen. When we look at the teachings of the Lord Buddha, it is so utterly profound. When we hear it, we don't see the profoundness of the teaching. What we see is what we know. Or what we hear is that what we understand. And what we understand is within the realms of our world. So we can't grasp. Just think about the first noble truth. The noble truth that there is to God. People say, yeah, there is to God. Or other people say, I can't see to God. But dukkha itself is such a profound thing that there is dukkha. What does it mean there is dukkha? That means there is restlessness. There is dis-ease. There's uncomfortable feelings. There is pain. And there is suffering. That all means there is dukkha. And who doesn't have this kind of dukkha? So the people who say they don't have dukkha think only of dukkha as suffering and pain. And quite a few people don't think they have pain or suffering. That's why they can't see the truth, that there is dukkha. Dukkha. If you just could understand the noble truth of dukkha and the noble truth of the origin of dukkha. I mean, there wouldn't be anything that would block our way into stream entry. Dukkha is such a profound thing. There is dukkha. What does it mean? And there's the origin of dukkha. If we really, really deeply understand, I mean, it could lead us to the truth. But because we don't want to see the dukkha, and we don't want to see the origin of dukkha, that's why we can't understand it. We always try to eliminate dukkha from our views. I mean, we always try, all our life, we've tried to run after the pleasant things. That's why we can't see dukkha. But what makes us run after the pleasant thing? Because of the dukkha that is happening just right at that very moment. Now just look at a very, very dreary day that you have. All the things that you are doing, you do because of dukkha. If they would be content, there wouldn't be no need, you know, to change. There wouldn't be no need to do anything. But because of the dukkha that is there all the time that drives us, we don't see it. Because it's so natural that it drives us. When we're hungry, that's dukkha. That's a form of dukkha. We get rid of dukkha and create a new feeling, like overeating. But this kind of thing that we don't see as dukkha. We scratch because of an itch that is dukkha. If we really, really deeply understand that there is dukkha, we truly understand what the Lord Buddha is teaching us. And if we truly, truly understand the origin of dukkha, the desire to be or become, people become, why do they become? They want to be something. Or some other people don't want to be something. I mean, because of dukkha, a lot of people kill themselves. They don't want to be. But that doesn't mean that the dukkha is not there. When they die, you know, they go into hell. And then there's much more dukkha than they have experienced in this world. When we have dukkha, we go and drink alcohol. Or do this, or do that. To evade dukkha, evade it all the time. We have an itch, we evade dukkha. We feel hungry, we evade dukkha. We feel thirsty, we evade dukkha. And then we feel sleepy, we evade dukkha. These are all forms of dukkha. Can you understand, can you see, can you sense the profundity of this teaching? If you really can sense it, if you really can feel it in every action that you do, in every movement of the body that you do, in every kind of thought that you form, in any kind of memory that you bring up, that the origin is the dukkha that is pervading us constantly all the time. And then, you know, people running after that soap puppet that they call sukha. What is the opposite of dukkha? The pleasant feeling. They run after the soap puppets in the moment they come close to the soap puppets because they are so beautiful. Just look at children, you know, always running from one. They burst. Then they run after the next. It bursts. They run after the next. It bursts. And then in the evening, they don't even have the feeling that there was dukkha. They always thought, you know, it was so much fun, you know, to run after all these soap bubbles. So they don't even understand, you know, why they run away. Because we don't want to see. Inherently, we don't want to see dukkha. We want to evade it. We want to get rid of it. So if you can't get rid of it, you know, there are medicines or there are drugs that are called alcohol. I mean, if that alcohol is too weak, you know, they go to heroin or these crazy medicines. Ecstasy and whatever it's called. To get rid of the dukkha. And there are clever people who think, okay, now this is not good, you know, alcohol is not good, drugs are not good. Let's go and meditate. To get rid of our dukkha. And of course, as long as we meditate, as long as we can stay calm, there cannot be any dukkha. If we are in upachara samadhi, how can there be dukkha? Because the kilesas are gone for that time. So there cannot be any dukkha. The moment we come back, there is dukkha. So that is not the way. It's just another way to evade dukkha. I mean, the only thing that is good when we do meditation is that we don't do any bad karma. But if we think, you know, that our karma, if we sit the rest of our lives in samadhi, our karma will go. No, our karma just waits until we come out. And then it comes back to us. We can do this for this life. We can do that for the next life. We can do that for 100 lives. That karma still waits until we come out. And then it hits us hard. And because it hits us hard and we feel the dukkha, we go back into samadhi. So it's nothing else. The way that is normally taught in the West about practice or Buddhism is only samadhi. So it's just another way to evade dukkha. It's just another way of our common ways to flee from dukkha. I mean, I don't want to say that it's a bad way, it's a good way. Because as long as we are in samadhi, we do not create any karma. Well, you know, not creating any karma doesn't eat up the karma. And we cannot, when we listen carefully to the teachings of the Lord Buddha, we never can get rid of our karma. There is no way that we can get rid of our karma. Because the moment we act, we do karma. The only person who doesn't do karma is an arahant. Because he has got of the things that create karma, that are the kilesas or avijja. But as long as we have avijja, we create karma. The moment we have an intention, we create karma. So that is certainly not the way. So the way is to face dukkha. And that is, of course, difficult. I mean, some people call it, you know, dukkha is only pain and suffering. And once they get rid of pain and suffering, you know, they think they have no dukkha. So what is it driving? What is that it drives them? to do this and do that if it's not dukkha. To change your posture, what is it? What is driving you to change your posture? When you sleep, you go to sleep. Because it's unpleasant to be sleepy and not to be drowsy. It's an unpleasant state of mind. To be hungry is an unpleasant state of mind. To be thirsty is an unpleasant state of mind. The body doesn't care if it's thirsty. It doesn't even know that it's thirsty. Just like the car doesn't know that it ran out of gas. The driver knows that it ran out of gas. Because he looks at the meter and sees, oh, there's no more gas in it. Or if he doesn't look at the meter, you know, he sees that the car is not running anymore. And he just watches, you know, just observes it. You know, what is happening to the car? Why is it not running? So he checks it. Okay, and then he sees there's no gas in the body. So, and it's the same thing with our body. I mean, if you can't do anything, you know, that means we need some food. Or we need some water. But we never think about it because we are so used to it. From the moment we wake, you know, from the moment we are born, you know, we get, the moment we feel hungry, we eat something. And the moment we feel thirsty, we drink something. So the path of practice is to investigate dukkha. To understand, to completely understand the profound teachings of the Lord Buddha. And it's profound. And if you really get a grasp of it, and if you really see the origin of dukkha, just to be something, just to be rid of dukkha, is also a form of tanha, the desire. Desire to be or not to be. The desire to be, you know, to have sukha or to not have dukkha. It's the desire that creates dukkha. The desire that the world should be like this, or that our environment should be like that, or that people should react like this. It's just the desire that creates dukkha. So we run away from dukkha by creating new dukkha. Because you use desire. So it's a circle. What do you call it? Catch 21, right?
Catch 22, 23.
So, I mean, there's no way out. So that is the first noble truth, then the second noble truth. The third noble truth is just a statement that there's an end of the path. And the fourth noble truth is that what we concentrate on when we start to go this path. To go to the end of dukkha. I mean, just thinking about the old body, you know, and thinking, okay, next life I have a new body. Okay, so what the heck? We don't even know our karma. Huh? There are mountains. How long does it take to wash down the mountain with rain? Endless time. Just thinking of, you know, okay, this is not what I want, you know, or I don't care. Yeah? I just don't care. It's also a desire. It translates very clearly, I don't want to see. I just don't care. I don't want to see. And does I don't want to see lead us to the end of dukkha? No. It leads us more into delusion. Because that is what is behind delusion, avijja. I don't want to see. I don't care. I give a shit. Very bluntly put. No, we do care for everything that we encounter from the moment we wake up, from the moment we open our eyes, until the moment we close our eyes. We care about everything what is happening. Care in the sense that we are aware of things that are happening. What is driving me to do this? What is driving me to scratch? What is driving me to move? What is driving me to drink? What is driving me to eat? To understand that the feeling behind it, be it a feeling or be it an emotion, be it a thought or be it a memory. I mean, we are actually, if we would look at our lives, you know, we are running programs, very old programs. Somebody has programmed them into us. That's what we think. I mean, the Christian thing that it was God, you know. And we think, you know, somebody else did something unto us, huh? So that's his fault, it's not our fault. But actually the programs are just right in front of us. Because it's us. We program the reaction, each kind of reaction. And once the programs are working, you know, more or less nicely, we don't even question them anymore. We just scratch, we just move, we just eat, we just sleep. That's all. Instead, you know, of being really careful, really caring about every moment that is happening. What is happening? And all what is happening in one of the moments, in one of the mind moments, is either one of the five khandhas. It's either vinyana, or it is rupa, or it is vedana, or it is sanya, or it is sankara. If it's a sense contact of the body, vinyana has to come. If it comes to sense contact of the body, we have to understand. And understanding, not in the sense of, you know, mentally understanding, but seeing, by observing it, that with each sense contact comes automatically attached. I mean, it's just like an attachment, clipped onto a feeling. And this feeling produces another thought, or a memory, or an association. And with this memory and an association comes another attachment, another feeling. And so this feeling builds up. And within the blink of an eye, we have a very strong emotion. We see somebody we don't like, you know, and hate comes up. Boop. There it is. So we think it's natural. It is just caused by this tree, or it's just caused by this person. Or it's caused by the sky. Emotion of being afraid, you know, once thunder and lightning comes up. For some people, you know, immediately the thunder comes and they shake because they're afraid. So they think that's natural. It's not natural. What is natural are the five khandhas. That means vinyana. Just the knowing that there is a sense data coming into, not yet knowing what kind of sense data. We don't know if it's a sense data of touch, or eye contact, or ear contact, or nose contact, or, what is it? Contact of the tongue, taste, or touch. Or thought. Not yet knowing. Vinyana just tells us there's a sense contact. Memory tells us what it is. It says it comes through the ears and it sounds like a cock. And you remember how fast this is? I mean, you hear something and immediately cocks or chicken or this comes up. It seems just to be like that. But it's not the way it works. I mean, the memory has to go down and find it. Find its association. And it takes a little while. But because we are not mindful, we don't see it, how it rattles through the memory and gets the right label for it. Because it's so fast. And we are so slow. What is so slow? So slow is our sati, our mindfulness. That's what is slow. We don't catch every mind moment. And within the blink of the eye, there are 3,000 mind moments. So if we could catch each of these mind moments, I mean, we would exactly see what is happening. What is happening right now at that moment? A feeling triggers a memory. A memory, has a attached feeling, you know, and it triggers a thought. And that thought triggers another memory. And feeling gross and feeling gross and feeling gross until it's a avalanche that hits us very strong. And then we think, you know, somebody else created this avalanche, not knowing that we ourselves created this avalanche. So if we understand the truth of dukkha, and if we understand the origin of dukkha, I mean, we can go a long way. Dukkha is nothing that we should evade. It's something there, you know, that is present there all the time. It's there, something to be investigated. What the hell am I doing right now? Why am I doing it? What kind of results does it have? What is dukkha? What is hunger? I mean, we call it hunger and eat something, huh? That means we don't understand a thing. What is the hunger feeling? So we have to experience it again, you know, to know what it is. Thirst, we have to experience it again to know what it is. It's a feeling. It's an unpleasant feeling, of course. Everything in this body, what is happening in terms of feelings, are rather unpleasant than pleasant. I mean, even laying down, you know, we think it's pleasant because, you know, we stretch our back hurts, you know, and then the hurt stops. So we think it's pleasant because we're not looking what is going on in the body. If you would look, you know, while we're laying down, you will see, you know, there are still a lot of unpleasant things in this body. Constant changes. The body is not a statue. I mean, it's not built out of wood, you know, even if it would, you know, it would grow. It's not built out of stone. I mean, it constantly changes. This body constantly changes. When we have food, you know, it constantly digests, you know, and then, you know, it goes down. The breath constantly comes in and goes out and, you know, produces a lot of changes. And the changes that we call, is that what we call unpleasant? Something more unpleasant, something less unpleasant. And something is neutral. We don't have a label for it because it's constantly happening. We're not even noticing it. To notice a neutral feeling, you know, it's just very difficult. What is a neutral feeling? Most of the things, you know, we feel it's more pleasant. Or it's unpleasant. But pleasantness arises only when the unpleasant thing has ceased. And unpleasantness arises because the pleasant things have ceased. I mean, really get down to it, you know. Really see it, you know, with your own inner eyes. Huh? See the truth of dukkha within yourself. It's happening all the time. I mean, if it would happen only within a year or within a week, you know, once in a week, you know, we would not be able to catch it. But it's constantly happening there. That's why it's so obvious, why it's always there. Just like Nibbana is always there, Sanditiko, Ihipasiko. Open your eyes and you see it for yourself. That's the teaching of the Lord Buddha. All what we need to do is open our eyes. No, we don't want to see, we don't care. Or we think everything is the same. I mean, that is just blindness, that is just delusion. It's just avijja, you know, putting a mat in front of us. Or putting a window a blind window in front of us. We just don't see. The practitioner, the real practitioner is really aware of everything that is happening. And then he feels, the moment he is aware of an unpleasant feeling, he sees the tendency of his mind to run away. And then he says, no, I want to experience it. Not to run away. And the moment he experiences, and then he experiences it again, and then again, and then again. And maybe after a million or a billion times, he understands, okay, this is an unpleasant feeling. He understands the truth of it. And he doesn't need to run away from it anymore. He just understands the truth. That's an unpleasant feeling. And then he understands the truth. That is a pleasant feeling. But there is no desire to change it anymore. But if we constantly run away, how can we ever see the truth? If our mind constantly leads us astray, if the kilesas constantly lead us astray and say, no, look at this soap bubble, or look at that soap bubble, or look at that soap bubble. I mean, all the day long we run after these soap bubbles. We never actually catch one, because the moment we catch one, it bursts, so we have to run after the next one. But in the evening we think, it was so much fun, wasn't it? We don't see the exhaustion, you know, if we wouldn't see any soap bubbles, you know, and you just run. It's just like you sit in meditation for 2 hours, you know? I mean, where's all this pain coming from? It's not because we do meditation, it's because it's there all the time. But we just don't care to see it. The pain of sitting, yeah? When we sit in the airplane, you know, coming from Canada, you know, sitting for 12 hours in the airplane, or maybe 20 hours. We don't see the pain. If we try to sit and meditate for 20 hours, we would see the pain instantly, you know? Even half an hour, maybe after 1.5 hours, or maybe after 3 hours. Where is that hell of pain coming from? Do you understand? Do you see how we don't see? We just don't see because there's something else is on our mind. You know, so many soap bubbles. I mean, the soap bubbles can be a memory, can be a thought, or can be a sight, or can be some of the sense coming. We run after that, forgetting what is happening within our heart, and forgetting why we run after that. The moment we force our mind, you know, to be on one object, then we see it all. I mean, it is there all the time, so we see it. We experience it. So let us take the first noble truth of dukkha, you know, to investigate dukkha. The first thing is that we have to stay with dukkha. Not wishing it to go away, not wishing it, you know, to be otherwise. Because that would be desire. And when we have desire, it just creates more dukkha. So just be with it. Completely naturally be with it and just look at it. Observe it with your inner eyes. Not think about it. Not assume this is because of... Because that's the first that comes in. I mean, the pain comes because, you know, I sit, you know, in this position for a long time. I mean, people who sit for 3 hours in meditation think that, you know, that they break their legs. How can that possibly be? Or I break my back, you know, when I go on like that. How can that possibly be? How can we break our back, you know, just by sitting? But the thought comes up and we believe it. See how stupid we are? Even if the leg, you know, falls asleep, you know, that it's, you know, it's a natural thing. So it just falls asleep. I mean, it's quite unpleasant. But we observe it, you know, see it. Okay, what is actually happening? We really want to understand. I mean, that is the only way that leads us out of delusion. To understand. But not the understanding that is the way of the kilesas. I want to understand what he's talking about. Oh, I want to understand, you know, what things are happening in my body by thinking about, or memorizing about, or reading books, or listening to talks. That's not the way of understanding I'm talking about. The understanding that I'm talking about comes through observation, and only observation, of the same fact over and over and over again. Until we are so mindful that we catch each step of the process. And once we catch each step of the process, within the realms of the five khandhas. We understand. We don't need to read books. Once this understanding comes, we don't need to ask anybody. Because this understanding is born out of experience. In other words, it's an insight. Seeing inside. Seeing in the inside the true. And that is the kind of understanding we need to get rid of avijja. Any kind of other understanding, yeah, is pretty useless. I don't say it's completely useless. The first understanding of the teachings of the Lord Buddha brings us to practice. But once we are decided to practice, I mean, then this kind of understanding we don't need anymore. We need to understand through investigation. I mean, the Lord Buddha didn't teach us, you know, at the time there weren't any books or there were hardly any recitation. He taught us, you know, to go in the forest, on the mountains, in the caves. And not in groups, but just by ourselves. To see the truth. The moment we are not distracted by other things that are happening around us, we can see the truth. It's there all the time. Don't worry, you know, it has not gone. The truth 2,500 years ago that the Lord Buddha proclaimed, you know, is still there. In the moment we open, just open our eyes, we see it. Ourself. But we run away from it. And that is pretty tough fetter. That we constantly run away from dukkha. Whatever we do, we run away. Just be aware of, you know, a few hours a day, how you run away from dukkha. And you will see the truth. At least the shine, it will shimmer through. I mean, whatever you do, think about it, why you do it. Because there's something, you know, unpleasant. And maybe it's only restlessness of mind. I mean, you can't bear the restlessness, that's why you do something. If you're completely content, if you're sitting in samadhi completely content, we don't want to do anything. The moment we get out of samadhi, you know, the restlessness or the kilesas are coming back. Just like a horde of monkeys, you know, running around, you know, jumping from this tree to the next, running after one banana after the other. Or like we, you know, running after one soba apple after the other. The moment we sit in samadhi, and we are really in upachara samadhi, I mean, we are contented, you know, we don't want to anything else to happen. We are just so contented, you know, experience the things that are happening. There's not even the slightest desire to do anything else or to change anything. The moment the kilesas come back, I mean, we want to change this, we want to change that, we want to change our methods of meditation if we are, you know, really into practice. I mean, then we don't change the world, you know, we change the method or we change us, or, you know, we put other clothes on, you know, we put... But once we are in upachara samadhi, we are content with all the things, you know, that are there. How can this happen? Can you understand, you know, if you sit long enough in samadhi, do you see, do you experience, when I say see, I mean, I always mean, do you experience, I mean, do you feel it? The power of dukkha, the power of avijja? How it lures us out to do this or to do that, to change this or to change that, not to comply with this, not to comply with that, to doubt this or to doubt that, to think about this or to think about that, to memorize this or to memorize that. Constantly. The moment we come out of this contentedness, you know, where we don't want to do anything at all, I mean, we just experience and we are completely full in this experience. There's no desire. So the desire comes from the kilesas, comes from avijja. Desire to change, desire not to be, desire not to be. So the moment we come out of samadhi, or even more, it's a this might be a more subtle change, but the moment we come out of the deep state of samadhi, where the whole world has disappeared, where the five khandhas have disappeared, I mean, that is an astonishing change. I mean, it's just like we come back in the middle of the world war, you know. We are between two sides. Soldiers shooting from all the sides, huh? And just in the middle. Until we get, you know, back, you know, and taking this side, you know, and then the next moment we take the other side. What are the sides? Are greed and hate, huh? One moment we take the side of greed, you know, the soldiers of greed, and then the next moment we take the soldiers of hate. And also greed and hate, you know, it's not, you know, I don't have greed and hate. Huh? A lot of Buddhists say that. I'm not greedy. I'm not hateful. I mean, we have likes and dislikes. That's what is greed and hate. All likes are greed. And all dislikes are hate. Huh? I mean, if we understand, it's just like dukkha. Oh, I don't have suffering. I don't suffer. I mean, why should I do anything? You know, I don't suffer. I don't have pain. Only if I have pain, you know, I practice. You know, if I don't have pain, I don't practice. I mean, that is just not understanding. It's just not understanding the teachings of the Lord Buddha. It's just like with greed and hate, you know. All the Buddhists, you know, all the good Buddhists in the West, you know, say they don't have greed and hate, huh? I mean, of course they have likes and dislikes, huh? It's pretty obvious that they have likes and dislikes. Just starting with food or toothpaste or, you know, whatever. Or clothes, or, you know, hairstyle, beard. I mean, whatever, you know. Whatever we like or dislike, you know. It's a form of greed and hate. And so when we come out of this deep state of samadhi where everything has disappeared, you know, we feel for the first moment like in a world war. Greed and hate taking over. And then we take the sides, you know. The moment we take over greed, you know, we don't feel it. Because we shoot hate, or, you know, or when we take hate, you know, we shoot the greed. It's because, you know, because avijja. What is avijja? It's called, sometimes it's called blindness. It's that, because of that, that's why we don't see it. And that's why we need to be reminded nearly every day of it. I mean, look at it, you know, it is just present there right now in this very moment. I mean, all what we need is to open our eyes and look and see it. That's it. But we just don't care. And that is where the problem is. We don't care. That is, I don't want to see it. And that is part of avijja. I don't want to see it. I don't want to know the truth. I don't want to get enlightened because I like sex. I don't want to be enlightened because I love. Huh? Not necessarily being the sexual thing, but, you know, just being the enticement, the cross feeling of love, of, you know, loving somebody. That's why we don't want to be enlightened. I mean, you know, all these stupid statements, because we don't see the truth. We don't want to see. It's there all the time. All what we need is to open our eyes to see for ourselves. And when we see it, we can walk through it. That's the end of it. If you really could listen to it and understand it, you know, just a glimpse of it. I mean, the understanding, sometimes the understanding. The way, you know, the Lord Buddha taught, you know. Some of his teaching, you know, the first five ascetics he taught. I mean, when he ended his talks, you know, five of them were arahants. Just through the understanding, through the deep understanding, through the nature of the things that they experienced, and, you know, putting that into their heart the moment they hear the talk, they got enlightened. And in some of the talks of the Lord Buddha, you know, they got Sotapanna, or Sakadagami, or Anagami. Just by that moment seeing the truth that hides inside them. And comparing it with the life that they had lived, you know, that moment, they say, ah, that's it. And they pass through. But we are so stupid because we are so educated. And all what is this, what do we want to understand with our brains? That's why we look at the teacher, you know, who teaches us Dhamma, you know, because we want to understand it, we want to grasp it from his mouth. If we would be listening, you know, with our hearts, you know, we might have the chance, you know, to freely understand that moment the word hits us, the truth of dukkha hits us, you know, it would open up our heart and we wouldn't understand. And we could pass through. No, because it's so fascinating to look at the person who teaches Dhamma. That's why we just another desire. The Dhamma takes place in the heart. It's originated in the heart. And where's the heart? It's there. It's not in the eyes of the others. It's not in the mouth of the others. I mean, all what we put is, you know, put our attention back to where it all comes from, where it all originates from. And it all originates from the citta, from our heart. All the kilesas are in our citta. And whatever we see is coming out of our citta as a projection. And that's what we see, the projection. So when we put our attention back to the citta, we see how the projections are made. And we don't fall for the projection. We don't fall for the delusion. So I wish you, both of you, that you understand, really truly understand the truth of dukkha, and that it is present every moment, there in our lives, and leads our lives. Through the desire, through greed, through likes and dislikes. Just see it for one day, or for 2 days, or for 3 days. And understand it profoundly as the Lord Buddha teaches. The Lord Buddha's teaching is so profound, if you really understand, boy, it goes down, you know, goes down to the root of all causes. But we just listen and understand it, you know, it just goes into one ear and other ear and say, yes, yes, we know it, you know, but I want to get rid of the God. And it's all what is in their mind. But that there's no change. I want to get rid of dukkha, you know, from the moment we are born, we want to get rid of dukkha. So we evade it. We run away from it. We flee. And that's why we never see it. That's actually nothing that we're to be afraid of. That's something that is even nature of all things. Anicca. Changing. Changing from one form to the other. That's all that takes place. Changes. Our body constantly changes. When we lie down, it changes. When we get up, it changes. The only thing then, when we don't notice it, when we fall asleep. Okay, that's different. Then we don't notice anything. We don't even know what has happened. Eh? We don't even know if somebody robbed us or somebody killed us. I mean, if somebody killed us, we just don't wake up in that body. We don't even know it. So that's not a good state of being. I mean, awareness is that, or sati is that, what leads us to the end of suffering. Sati together with the investigation. Sati and panya. I mean in Mahasati and Mahapanya. I mean the great sati and the great panya. That leads, this is the weapons of the anagami to lead him beyond avicca. So in the beginning we have to develop sati and panya. So sati is mindfulness, is awareness, awareness of really what is going on. And panya is developed through seeing, through experiencing, through investigation. To questioning, not just doing what you know, what the kilesa is telling us, but questioning, what the hell, you know, what do you want to do? Why do you want to do it? And what kind of results is it? That's a form of panya. What the hell is this body? I want to understand it. What the hell is feeling? I want to understand it. I want to see it. I want to experience. Not only one time. Oh yeah, I experience it now. Now I know. No. Now I know is the kilesas. Now I know how it works. I don't fall in this trap anymore. Kilesa. Avijja. That is what. It's not only, you know, it's not only delusion. It wants to know, but it's not being able to know. Because it can only know within the realms of the conventional reality. It cannot go beyond the conventional reality because it is conventional reality. Avijja. So it can only understand within the terms of the conventional reality. It can never see the truth. But it always tries to understand. It always tries to know. So we have to find new measures, new ways, new methods to get down to the true knowingness. The easiest way to get down to true knowingness is just go into Apana Samadhi, where everything disappears. And all what is left is the nature of our citta, knowingness. So then we see, you know, the fallacy, you know, that is, that's all what we want to know, what we understand in the world, you know, it's not necessary, because we know it already. The heart already knows it. All what we need to do is open the heart to see it, to understand it. But we still try to assume, don't we? We still try to think and memorize, you know, and change our ways and change our tactics and so on and so on and so on. Because that is the way of the kilesas, that is the way of avijja. I mean, just go to the heart, you know, open it up and then sees and understands immediately. And that's what is called insight, you know, that's why we can't figure out where is this insight coming from. I mean, it's coming from the nature of our citta. That's where it's come from. Inside, yeah? It's there all the time. I mean, all what we need is open it up. See? Santitiko. There it is. In front of your eyes. To experience right now. Here and there. Okay? With this I close the talk.